we granted that, and then now I hope that Home Affairs and Treasury have met to actually do that. But we have a document that talks to the proposal to deal with that issue of customs on the bill coming from Home Affairs. And so we have a document that looks like this one. It may be black and white or in color. That looks like this. If it is black, where it is orange or whatever, should be black. Yeah. And then together with the proposal of an amendment or inclusion dealing with that, this document, we should be having this document in our hands. Number two, we, after the input of Department of Justice, you remember that it had a lot of text-related matters and alignment and drafting and whatever, all things. And we did ask our legal office as well as the department and state law advisors to have a look at that input from Justice and see whether there are any things that they agree upon to improve the drafting of that. And then now there is a document they have produced. I have been reliably informed that it is a product of all the three. Then we should be having this particular document in our hand. I don't know how it will look like in front of you, but it is in color. If it is in color, then there are red and black text that is on that particular document. Then another thing is that you'll remember in the last meeting as well, then there was an understanding that Home Affairs and SAPS, they have agreed, and then there is what is outstanding is just a formal document that talks to what they have agreed upon. I think the DG has got that document. I also have this particular document. Anyone that needs a copy can have, but all what we need to know is that is whether they have concluded that agreement. And then, but you, I think just get a copy to that Hussein and Fickler. And then, do you have a copy, Gmed, for the one of SAPS?
No.
He doesn't. Okay. No, then it is fine if you have a one copy there, then it is fine. Then also, honorable members, immediately after the tabling of the BMA bill, you'll remember that it came out, and then when we went to the elections, and then I did sit with the document, try and internalize it. Then there were issues that I tried to get clarity from the department, and also some other proposals to actually, in my understanding, to improve the bill. And then the department actually has responded to that, and it is supposed to be a copy that looks like that. I'm not sure whether you've got copies of it. But it may be in black and in black and white. If you could just double check. It's the same. That's the one. Okay, thank you. But I just want to make it clear. I undertook that exercise without your mandate, but it was during the time that we were not here, but to try and seek and improve and So if you have the document, then you will advise accordingly what we need to be doing, and then whether we need to actually pick up some of the things that are there, which the department, I think, there are certain things that they understand that we are agreeing on them, and but it depends now on the committee whether we are agreeing on that. I think that those are the documents that are supposed to be in front of us. And on that score, honorable members, then I should not misuse time, because I think we'll need to finish a little bit earlier. Then to allow the DG to lead from the SAPS document, then when you are done with the SAPS, then you get to your proposal, and then the other documents will follow. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thanks, Chair and the honorable members. Chair, as we indicated, I will start with the SAPS document. There is nothing there, Chair, except to say myself now and General Patlan, we have signed the document that was presented in the previous meetings, basically saying that document that there are no, in the bill, there's nothing which is unconstitutional as far as the SAPS. And as well as with the legislative matters, there's no issue as long as we're clear about the classical policing functions of SAPS, and then of the issues of the specialized functions, and as well that the police stations within the border environment will still be there because SAPS has got a particular mandate to be there. And then also now that in operational matters, we'll still engage, but as far as the bill is concerned, there's nothing we want to be changed, so everything is covered. So we've distributed that document. Then, Chair, coming now
let
to...
Let me just check with the members. Is there anything on the SAPS agreement or consensus? None. You may proceed.
Chair, with the Treasury one, Chair, we will try to make some in the presentation here.
I just want to find out here, because I see there's a different date, the 19th and the 12th, September and October. Yes. So this one was signed today.
By the Commissioner. I signed it. Remember, we have to prepare it together. And then for me, I pass, I send it to the Commissioner. I think it was abroad and all that, but it came back and looked at it and signed. Thanks, sir. Chair, with regard to the Treasury, you'll recall that in the last meeting, we're saying there's a part which we more or less in agreement about it, to say there will be a differentiation between the customs border law enforcement and as well as the collection of revenue at that level. But now how do we take that thing down? What's the issue? So, Chair, this document which we are presenting, now we submitted to Treasury, but has not yet been signed by them. So it is a version of the Department of Home Affairs. We want to make that clear, to say, we've done this, I've signed a letter to the DG of Treasury to say this is what we are proposing, but has not yet come back to us and say we are agreeing or what. But we want to put it on the committee that that's what we have worked out. So that's what we were still waiting for. So, Chair, what I will do now is that I will want Elroy now to take us on this document, and then from there, then I will say, based on this document, this is what now we are proposing. So, Elroy.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, honourable members and colleagues. So I will make a couple of comments on page 1, but then in the interest of time, I'm going to jump to the diagram on page 5, because the diagram on page 5, we're looking at this document, members, document that looks like this. So I'll jump to page 5 because that contains the proposals. But let me make a few introductory comments from page 1. So the first comment to make is that our understanding of the customs function is that it is a value chain that starts outside of our country. It comes to a border post and it goes inland. So in other words, this integrated value chain is quite a long one, and also there is some degree of complexity. The second point to make is that we have tried to disaggregate and segment that value chain in a number of phases and in a number of different steps. And the reason why we've done that, it is precisely because we have proposals in terms of which segments, which part of that value chain should be retained by SARS, and which other parts of that value chain should be transferred to the BMA. So our understanding is that there are roughly 2,500 people in SARS right now that perform the entire customs function in its totality. Of those 2,500 people, there are about 1,400 that are physically located at ports of entry, at the commercial ports of entry. We are also very much alive to the fact that customs and the related revenue collection plays a very important part when it comes to the revenue of the state. In fact, about 30%, 179 billion rand in that region, but 30% of the total revenue of the state comes from customs. So we understand the importance of protecting that value chain, ensuring that there are no negative consequences. But the last introductory comment I want to make, we have looked at that value chain and we've asked a very simple question: where is most of this money collected in that entire value chain? And the simple answer that we've arrived at, and Treasury and SARS are in agreement with us, is that the overwhelming majority of revenue collected happens outside of a border post. In fact, over 99% of the money is collected outside of a border post. Less than 1% is physically collected at the border post. Now that statement's going to become important when we make our proposals later. So members and chairperson, with your permission, I want to jump straight to page 5, because that really summarizes the essence of this entire document that we've presented. So this document, or this diagram on page 5, there are two parts to this diagram. On the left-hand side, it outlines the value chain for the movement of goods. On the right-hand side, it outlines the value chain for people with baggage, personal baggage and goods, and you know, what you take with you as a traveler. But Chairperson, I would want to focus on the left-hand side, because that is where the real issue is in respect of the movement of goods coming in and out of the country. Let me also say that this diagram primarily talks about goods being imported into South Africa, so we're not talking about export going out of the country. So the first point to make about this diagram now, in time to come to some of the details, is that there are two broad phases in the customs value chain. The first phase is called the compliance phase, and we will explain that in a second. And the second phase is called enforcement, and there are a number of steps within each of those phases. So let's start with compliance. The first step in the customs value chain is when a trader, a business person in a foreign country, decides they have goods that they want to export from their country and they want to bring it into South Africa. When that decision is made, they go online, they go onto the SARS website, and they need to complete a range of documents online. They have to meet certain requirements, they have to explain the goods, they have to explain the value of the goods, they have to complete a detailed manifest. Okay, so all of that is done online. There may be certain payments. In fact, there most certainly will be payments that will be required once SARS has then looked and assessed all of those documents, and especially the supporting documents, and SARS would say you can definitely now proceed to start the process of exporting those goods to South Africa. So that is basically step one there. That's called electronic processing of traders and revenue collection. The goods then leave the country, they come to a South African port of entry, and that is step two. At this point in time, the main action that happens in this value chain is that customs headquarters, they would basically issue a directive instruction to a particular port of entry, and based on their assessment of the risk of that cargo or the goods, which they would, you know, rate in a particular way, high, medium, low risk. If goods have been marked as high risk, then they would issue an instruction to that port and they would say to the customs officials, these are the list of containers or goods that you need to physically inspect based on the risk profile. Okay, so that is where the manual compliance inspection comes in. Okay, let me at this point say that a total of roughly 13% of all containers and goods that come into South Africa are physically inspected. So the overwhelming majority are not physically inspected. I believe that today SARS is presenting the annual report. Maybe those figures have gone up. But the 13%, I know it comes from, if not last year, or the previous year's annual report of SARS. So that's the first act of inspection. It is driven by an instruction, a directive that comes from HQ. But then there's a second type of inspection that takes place. And honorable members, this explanation becomes important, what I'm explaining, because we're going to explain later what we think must stay with SARS and what must come to the BMA. So the second type of inspection is where a customer official decides on the spot for a range of different reasons to have and conduct an inspection that is not driven by a directive or an instruction from HQ. They may come across certain things that simply just do not look appropriate and look suspicious, and they can initiate their own manual inspection. So that is an act of inspection. When they do this inspection, there are only three things that they check. They check the origin of the cargo, the goods, origin. The second thing they check is the value. What is the value of the goods? And the last thing they check is, have the goods been correctly classified, classification? So those are the only three things that they check. Origin, value, and classification. If there is anything inconsistent in relation to those three variables based on the supporting documents that they provided earlier, before the goods were shipped, then SARS can issue them with a fine, a penalty, to say that either you have incorrectly declared the value or you've incorrectly classified the goods, and therefore there's a penalty. Then what will happen is that that trader will be given an opportunity to make a payment. In most instances, that payment is made online. In some instances, it can be issued on the spot and they can make that payment. Okay, so that payment, the payments that are made physically at the port of entry, that is that very small amount, less than 1% of the payments that are made physically at the port of entry. Now, the last scenario that emerges in these inspections is once, if a container is open and they find things that are completely and utterly not related to what was said in the supporting document, and in fact those goods are in fact restricted or illegal or prohibited goods. In those instances, the next broad phase kicks in, which is called enforcement. So now we are beyond compliance. This is where law enforcement kicks in. And this is then where entire criminal procedure process unfolds. The goods are goods are seized, and eventually they are handed over to SAPS. So that action, those steps in the value chain, all take place at the port of entry, and of course they're handed over to the nearest SAPS police station. Now, honourable members, those steps that I've just explained, and those two broad phases, we have considered those phases, two phases and the steps, and we are proposing the following in relation to what should remain with SARS and what should come to the BMA. We are saying under the compliance phase, all the work that happens online, where you complete, you indicate what you want to export, you provide all the supporting documentation, you make the relevant payments, that is a major part of the work of SARS. Even managing the central risk engine, all of that we are saying can and should remain with SARS. Okay? Now, the importance of that is that we are in effect saying that revenue collection should remain a SARS function. That is in reality what we are saying. Okay? And we are even making a point here that we have made proposals to even, that we come to the committee with to reinforce that point where the revenue collection function should remain with SARS. So that is step number one. But immediately you come to the customs functions at the port of entry, which is step two, from manual compliance inspections all the way down. We are of the view that all of those functions, manual compliance inspection, the collection of any taxes or fines, both the enforcement functions, all of those should be BMA functions. The one main reason for that is that we believe very strongly that we need the single command and control for the BMA to be effective. We are open to a scenario where on occasion there may be a need for specialists from SARS to come in and do random inspections. We are very much aware of that particular scenario. But we feel equally strongly that the day-to-day job, the full-time job of customs should, at the port of entry, should become a border guard and function. So, Chairperson, in summary form, that is really what we are proposing. Let me just make one or two last comments as it relates to the bill that we currently have in front of us. So the first point I want to make about the bill, and we'll come to the details, but I just want the members to keep this at the back of their minds, Chair, is that where we talk about the functions of the BMA in Section 5 of the bill, there is a provision for the BMA to cooperate with other organs of state. So immediately that provision to cooperate is already there in the functions of the BMA. Point number two, in Section 28 of this draft bill, we have a section dealing with implementation protocols. Implementation protocols come from the IGR, the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, and implementation protocols basically provide for different organs of state to collaborate and work together. So already we have made explicit provision for organs of state to work together. And then lastly, Chair, we the members will remember we have got an interministerial committee where the Minister of Finance is expected to be a member. We've got a Border Technical Committee where we expect the DG of Treasury to be a member. We also expect the Commissioner of SARS to be a member. And we are saying those two structures also allow for some degree of oversight, and it allows those organs of state to also raise any concerns should they believe that the customs function is not being adequately or appropriately implemented by the BMA. So, Chairperson, that then constitutes our broad proposals. We do have specific proposals in terms of how we wish to phrase this in the bill, but that will come later and our colleagues will deal with that. Thanks, Chair.
Before we must go there, but before we go to that, to this document,
Okay.
So, Chair, I wanted just to add two points here, Chair. To say one of the consideration why we are saying at a port of entry we don't need to split this. You'll recall that in the BUSA submission there was an issue about delaying the trade. Because if now you've got that point number two, which is manual compliance, is done by SARS, and then you've got an enforcement. So it means now that one cargo, there's a risk that it can be opened twice, and then it will cause a delay now in the trade. That's why I was saying we don't need to split that, as it is currently happening. So once you open that cargo, if we were opening it for tax purposes, you'll also check if there are goods which are not right and all that, then it moves. And then it means further that that 77% or what would get now today, if now you are right from the SARS back office, those ones, they move from country of origin straight to the country. They don't get checked. So that's what we wanted to really emphasize here, to say that's a point. Then the other important point for me to add is on that collection of taxes, stroke fines. That money will be transferred to SARS account or to the National Revenue Fund. Still, whether it's going to be collected, that 1%, it's not going to be collected and remain with the PMA. It's going to be collected and then again submitted into the National Revenue Fund. So I'm saying the PMA has got nothing to do with the revenue. Even if it collects that one, it collects it and then still put it in the National Revenue Fund. So, Chair, as we are saying about that, this is what we are presenting as Home Affairs. We looked at it, so it's not that I'm saying it's what we have agreed with National Treasury. That is our understanding. But again, now legal can take us now to say, to do that, what are the proposals which we are coming up?
Let me just double check with honourable members. I think honourable members, on the biscope that has been explained to us, are we having any issue to raise? Because it's only our understanding of what they have said here that will assist us to understand the text. We see.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is the right time to raise it or after the proposals, but let me just make this comment. And it's simply this. I mean, I appreciate the explanation of the value chain and the various steps that do, because it kind of makes it clear. But, you know, in my mind, I think that those personnel who are from customs, I think you used the figure of 1,500 or something, who are situated at the port of entry, although they have the expertise to some degree to understand the risk of cargo, the decision is not made there with them. The decision is made somewhere else. That is the balance of the other staff sitting at customs. And those are the guys who have the many years of experience and understanding of how to identify the risk cargo. So, in my mind, the question then is, we're not taking the 1,500 guys. It's going to be 1,500 plus more. And it's those guys who understand the risk profile. If what I'm suggesting is correct, then, Chair, it makes it a bit difficult for, I mean, and with great respect, it makes it difficult for us to understand and agree to a proposal that we don't understand the complexities to, that other people are sitting with the competencies who've been involved in this thing for many years, will be able to say, yes, this thing can work or cannot. And maybe you'll get that response after your proposal is put through to customs. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to put that on the table, and that no matter how well you would explain it to us, there are things that are unknown to us as members of Parliament to understand the complexities that are involved in this value chain from start to finish.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it may be correct. I think Honourable Hussein would understand that this particular document and the proposal, as we have said, has been forwarded to the DG of Treasury, and then but they have not yet responded. But I mean, we still have time. I think some other few days moving forward, you know, to expect their response. But then I think for now is that the DG, this side, they are explaining exactly what transpired and what they've considered and what they think is the best in relation to the cabinet decision. Remember that they just implemented a cabinet decision. So what is there that can be done? Although is that the how part of it might will still lie with the president on the proclamation on transfers of functions and whatever. And then the president may refuse to transfer this to the hands of the BMA, or may do so with certain amendments and then anything can happen, but to implement the cabinet decision to establish the BMA, and in the absence of Treasury to play the ball effectively on the football pitch, this is what the department that is charged with the responsibility that it is trying to do in order to take us forward. And I think can respond and move forward.
I think we have responded. I think let me not confuse things. I think the way it's responded
okay.
is fine. So I can hand over now to legal just to explain again how we're going to be implementing this in terms of the statute.
Just a second, I think the Honourable Zubedo wants to make an
impression. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to make some things clear from my side. We say there is step one, and then before we reach step one, 99% of customs revenue has been collected. Are we saying that? So now, if there is risk, it is only on 1% of the 30% of customs collected. Is that what is here? Because if you remove 99%, then all the steps here now, we are left with 1%. And then it makes sense to expect a BMA from step number two, where it's revenue and compliance, and step number three, where there can be spot checks by SARS, therefore allowing separation of duties. If now there has been a problem here because of the separation of duties, there is unlikely to be corrupt action because these people are not from the same agency that will collect number three. They determine then whether laws have been broken or not. Well, thereafter, then police take over from enforcement, where they seize the prohibited goods, or perhaps where there is human trafficking, or illicit trade, or environmentally prohibited stuff getting into South Africa, health hazards getting into South Africa, and so forth, and then hand over to the SAPS if then you are found guilty at step number five going to six. So the revenue does its 99% of its work even before we get into the blue steps. If that is the case, I do not have a problem with 1%, but people with experience perhaps could then clarify, because this whole thing is based on risk. If 99% of the risk has been this thing removed, then you are left with 1% of the risk. And then even with that 1% of the risk, there can be intervention from SARS customs, because we do not want to lose money because of our customs getting into untested hands. And if that is the case, I fully agree with what is here. Thanks.
Okay, I think the DG,
you can respond on the questions of the 99% and whether it is upfront and it's 1%, and then also the spot checks by SARS, you know, during the value chain, if they want to. And then
you can move thanks, Chair. Wanted us to use now this 179 billion, which was saying is what is collected in customs. Remember, said 30% is equal to 179 billion according to the reports which you are getting. Once you do that, the 1% of 179 billion would be about 1.79 billion, which is what is collected in the port. That's the first figure I want to use. The other figure which I think is very important is the one when we say out of those, the cargo which goes through the port, it's not all of it which gets opened. It's only 13%. So it means now the rest moves from the country of origin through the border directly to the factory without it being opened. So if you use that, out of that 179 billion, is only 23 billion of that 179 which is being checked. The rest is not checked anyway as we speak. So what it means, it goes back to what the honorable member is asking. We are saying in our understanding that part which is 99% which they collect, it is done at the back office. It's got nothing to do with the border, because that goods is there at the country of origin. You send your documentation, they look at it, they agree whatever figure it is. When that cargo comes into the port, it just passes. Nobody opens it. But now on the 13%, that has been done already. But when it comes now to the border, you just open that. That's where now you can get this penalty. So your penalty is only in the 13%. But the rest which you are not checking, how are we going to know about we must charge them penalty or not? You are not going to be able to do that because you didn't open that cargo. So it means, it's what we're saying on our side, that you can be able to do that. Maybe a BMA can be able maybe to check more probably than that 13%. That's another reality which you have. But as you were asking me to say, but what can we, in terms of SARS participate? That's why we are also, as Elroy was mentioned, that in the current bill there's already those provisions, but if we need to emphasize that in a particular way, which I want to make this example even with health. If now there can be, well, like what happened now before, when there was an outbreak of Ebola, when there was an outbreak of the Ebola, health comes to Home Affairs Ghana in a border post, which now then will be a BMA, and says, no, you don't have skills to manage this. But what we want at a particular counters within the port, we must put a machine which is able to test your temperature and look at whatever and say, no, you must be tested. But the person who must sit behind that can't be the ordinary immigration officer, because it doesn't have skills. Then at that time, health will send their specialist to sit there in the border. BMA can't say you can't come in here. So if SARS, under the manual compliance, as the bill currently allows that, they feel that for a particular moment, whether it's for a training or for an oversight, they can have staff members who will sit there and respond to that question of Honorable Hussein, to say those skills, so those skills will still be there, because at the end, the interest is not about BMA, it's about the country. So they will be able to go and sit there and be able to do what is expected of them to do.
Okay.
I'm sorry to make the meeting, but I just wanted to check with this remaining with the penalty, because if we want to mitigate the risk of this incident, then the penalty here should be a deterrent to people and to risk appetite of illicit traders or whatever. That is the first area. Then the second area, there has been concerns from Musa. Let's say we are delaying trade. Some of the things we brought, the traditional goods may be damaged. Have we taken that into account in this scenario then?
Okay, we will proceed, DG.
Thanks. It's exactly, that's why we are coming on this issue to say, you divide that function. You say manual compliance must be with SARS, and then enforcement must be in BMA. It's exactly what we're going to create, because SARS will take those cargo and open it for tax purposes. And then after that, maybe that thing sits, because remember this thing, they take time. Maybe it sits there for 7 days. Once night has passed, and then the BMA stops it again and say, I want to open this thing so that I can check whether there are no illicit goods and all that, then we're talking about 14 days. Then those things will perish. That is the problem. But if you do it the way it is being done now, you don't split it. You say, when those goods get to the port of entry, once now at the back office, SARS give us that pre-assessment, that 13%, when that cargo is opened by the same BMA, which will assist SARS as far as looking at the value, at the country of origin, and whatever else. But at the same time you are doing that, you can't say, I must close my eyes if there is illicit goods here and all that. Then you will do it at the same time. But once we have two organizations, in a way, operating in the same place, that's why it causes problems. Because now your command and control is not one. That's why we're making an example even with the people and say, we will, if now we use the people's type of when there was, again, this command and control, and say, an immigration officer might pick up, hey, this person should not be allowed into the country, and then send that thing to police. And then the police, maybe in that office at that time, there is no body or whatever, and then the person comes through into the country. Because your command and control is not one. That's why you are saying, for you to achieve a total better management of the border management, have one command and control. So our view is that once you split that, is going to create what the business was saying. But if now you combine it, you will resolve that problem, because anyone is done under one. There is no two processes in one.
Yeah, I think we have exhausted the discussion a bit, but I'm sure something that can just also assist us is that the 1% that we are likely to collect at the moment, it is only due to the 13% sample that is inspected.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got what would that be, 77 or 87?
87.
Then you have got 87 that we are not doing anything, we are not inspecting, and then we are not deriving anything. But now the question that arises is, if we can get 1% of the total customs income out of 13% of the total cargo that goes through the port, how much will that money be if 100% was checked? Then that means, in principle, merely for only checking 13%, we are losing more. There is a lot of wrongdoing that is happening in the 87 that we are not putting an eye on. That means there is a lot that is going through there, whether it is illicit goods, or whether it is wrong classifications, or wrong valuations. That is happening in the 87. Therefore, it should then be important, I think, for customs officials to strive to check everything if it was possible. But then it has to be balanced out with the efficiency of movement of goods, of trade, as well. Because, I mean, if you are going to check every Tom, Dick and Harry, then you'll have long queues and the rest. But I think the understanding is that if on the 13% you are able to pick illicit goods or wrong valuations or even cargo that was said to be coming from Malaysia, and when you open it you find that it is coming from Argentina, then How much of these in the 87 that we are not looking at is happening? Then it is supposed to be a lot. And possibly that may be explaining why are we having heavy machinery that is in the country, that has not been manufactured here in the country, that are used to manufacture drugs in Johannesburg, in the middle of Joburg. Heavy machinery. How it comes, how they came. No. They have been raised, they have been found there. Yes. Yes. Now, I'm just saying that maybe that 87% that is unchecked may explain how those equipments have actually reached our country. And then the number of those drugs that we all know that may be manufactured in Brazil or whatever, and then found themselves in the middle of Bloemfontein. How have they gone through the ports of entry? Maybe through that 87% that we never worry to put an eye on. But I think all of us, we are worried about illicit goods, illegal products, we are worried about that. And also we are worried about the taxes, the revenue. And then now it will depend on how we respond to these things, if we are really worried about that and patriotic about that. And should I continue? Can we continue the proposal? You wanted to say something?
Yeah, no, I'm satisfied because deterrence will look after the 80%. I mean the deterrence of the sentences. That or the chances of being caught, and then if you are caught, then the consequence management, which is about step 4 or 5 downwards after things.
Yeah, especially on the manual compliance area, the possibility that the SARS would have the power to come and make some random checks. And then the BMA officials then cannot take chances because they can be caught up, then we fire all of them. Or then you can't have anything going through. So that's the separation of duties or something like that with the spot checks. I think should be able to improve the situation. Can you proceed?
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members. What we've endeavored to do is to draft or include in the draft bill precisely what we've been discussing. In other words, dealing with the exclusion of the revenue collection function at the port of entry. So the first suggestion that we have there is if we look at section or clause 5 of the bill. Now, clause 5 of the bill deals with the functions of the authority. And currently we have 3 paragraphs there. Paragraph A, B, and C. Paragraph A, it says the functions of the authority are to A, facilitate and manage the legitimate movement of persons within the border law enforcement area. B, we talk about facilitate and manage the legitimate movement of goods within the border. Now what we, and then C obviously is the cooperation and coordination. What we're suggesting from our point of view is to include a new paragraph C. So the current paragraph C will become D, and the new paragraph C will read as follows. C, to facilitate the collection of revenue within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry. And what you'll note there is that we've indicated and facilitate the collection. It's not the facilitation and management. It's only the facilitation. So what we're trying to do is to create an enabling environment where this can happen, to obviously collect that, to get the revenue, or to create a situation where that revenue can be collected. All right. Having done that, it may be viewed that we are only protecting the revenue of SARS, but mostly we address the collection of function, hence we propose an amendment to Clause 23 of the bill as well. Now, if you look at Clause 23 of the bill, that deals with the funds of the authority. And what we want to make clear here is that these funds are not the funds of the BMA. It would go to. So what we're proposing to do there is to then basically include a paragraph C or add to the current paragraph C. We're saying currently the paragraphs, let's read clause 23. The funds of the authority consists of A, monies appropriated annually by Parliament, B, any government grants made to it, and C, any other monies legally acquired by it. Now what we're saying in paragraph C is that we should add the following. After we've said any other monies legally acquired by it, we say excluding revenue collected in terms of section 5C. So we're referring back to the revenue that's collected by SARS at the port of entry. Now, having done that, we have to then look also at the definition section. Because when we draft our legislation, you work through all and then see, is there a need to define anything after you've dealt with this? And we have the view that having done this, we have to look at the definition of revenue as it is being utilized now in the bill without suggestion, so that it mirrors what's being said in the South African Revenue Services Act. And basically what we've done is we've indicated that in clause 1 of the bill, there should be a definition of revenue that means, well, that has the meaning ascribed to it in section 1 of the South African Revenue Services Act, Act 34 of 1997. So that's our suggestion from our side based on the information that we have at hand in order to make sure that we exclude the power of revenue collection at the ports of entry and borders within the border law enforcement area, and that money goes to SARS. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. And then, now, honourable members, I think now it has been explained exactly how the proposal is actually now effected on the amendment of the bill. That is Section 5 on the functions. Then that seeks to actually indicate what the Border Management Authority will be doing in relation to the collection of revenue or customs. Is that the BMA will then be facilitating that collection, and then also, of course, in terms of the fund of the authority, in terms of Section 23, that what it is being collected there will then be not form part of the funds or the income of the BMA. And that is what is being said there, and also the definition, to align the definition of revenue so that we read it properly on Section 23C, that is the same definition as in the SARS Act. It's becoming a little bit much more clear as a proposer. No. I'm saying is, remember that we went through this document. Now it is being effected on the amendment. Whether you feel that what has been said now here actually talks to the theoretical narration that we have been going through with a lot of pictures as well, and some of them may be black and white on your pages, but so it's just simply to satisfy ourselves that what has been now amended or inserted on Section 5 and 23 together with the definition of revenue reflects what is we have been talking about on the other document. Yes.
Chair, I mean, I understand it, and it does make sense. But again, just to come back to the point that I made earlier, unless, of course, there's some response by SARS, only then would we understand whether or not, to what extent do these proposals actually impact on SARS's ability to do what they're supposed to do, and how it affects existing legislation like the Customs Act and their roles and functions. So, I mean, on the face of it appears to be reasonable to me, but the experts at SARS must be able to comment, and I think maybe then we'll get a bit of different angle on it. But I'm not opposed to what's here currently.
It reflects what we've been talking about, the proposal. You are happy that it reflects what we have been talking about here. Not that you are agreeing.
Yes.
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 No, it's fine. The document.
Yes, in fact, I think I do not have a problem with the revenue collection aspect of it anymore. And then I do not have a problem with security anymore with regards to the Constitution and the law. But I want to flag one thing, and that is industrial relations. Did we have an input from expert industrial relations people on this matter? For instance, some people are going to be employed, taken from the police and put in the BMA and the border control management and that thing. Have we provided for industrial relations by interacting with different departments like public administration, public services and administration, and then other people with expertise in industrial relations, because we do not have to generate other fears now as soon as we implement this. Thank you.
Do you have a response to that one?
Yes, Chair. No, yeah. No, Chair, this thing is in two ways. First, let me start at a NEDLAC process. Who is a representative, who is a stakeholder at NEDLAC? It's COSATU and Labour. So they're participating there. So that's why, Chair, we said, if you remember, that the Labour have said, look, we don't have a problem with the establishment of a BMA, but as long as it is not a public entity. And you remember what was their issue. They were saying, we are taking, it was only as far as we are reducing their number of members in a collective bargaining. But if we're establishing BMA as a public entity, they will be fine if it was a government department. Then we responded by saying, no, for as far as negotiations of the public of the benefits and everything, BMA will still be subjected to the bargaining council. That's what we said. That is point number one. Point number two, which then I was misinterpreted, like was saying government can't pay more money, it's only the public entity. Then we say, what was the reason of establishing BMA as a public entity? Was to address exactly that concern, to say, if the 1,400 staff members were at SARS, SARS is a public entity. And then now you can't move those staff into a government department. It's going to be very difficult because their conditions of service are completely different to the public service. But if we establish a BMA as a public entity, it means it's going to be easy for you to get staff from SARS to come and join this, because it's the same thing. It's going to be easy for you to take somebody from Home Affairs to come and join the public entity because the conditions of service are not the same. So that was precise one of the reasons why we established a BMA as a public entity. That's why we were arguing with Labour and say, if you are saying by establishing a public entity we are agentizing government, what is SARS? SARS is a public entity, Schedule 3. This will be also a public entity, Schedule 3. So it doesn't make anything on that. Secondly, what is going to happen? Remember, that's why we always say this is a framework legislation. That is a point number one. Point number two, it is made clear here in the bill that no employee will be forced to go and transfer into a BMA. I might work for Home Affairs, you might think that I want to go and join a public entity. I might not, and say I want to remain in the public service. Secondly, there might be a difference whether I'm in a public service. That's why one of the things which COSATU said, Labour, they were fine with it. When we said that public entity is going to be part of the GEPF, government pension fund, is not going to create its own pension fund. So that if now I move staff from whoever, whether it's police or Home Affairs or whatever, to the BMA, they're not going to lose out based on terms of their conditions. Then in this country, we know about the sunset clause to say when PMA is going to be established, it cannot take those things into consideration. There might be people who've got skills who PMA can't do without, but they don't want to leave their where they are working. There will be a sunset clause to say, no, we'll transfer you for 5 years or seconded or whatever to come and work in this entity until it gains skills. And that's why even in the last meeting I explained to say, the question of skills, they get acquired. BMA will acquire those skills which it do not, but in the transition, it will be able to say, I'm getting these people for so long, we build those skills, and then based on that, then it moves forward. Then the last element, Chair, is to go back now to the bargaining chamber. That's why we talk to labor and say, we first interact with you at a NEDLAC process, but when are those transfers and all that is going to happen? PMA is going to go through the process of the public service bargaining chamber and again go there and meet with the unions and say how this thing is going to be done. But as you were asking now, Public Service Administration, DPSA, is part of the oversight committee for the establishment of PMA. And then now we're also dealing with the issue now of change management. For change management, is one of the critical things we looked at it and say, without that, you can establish this thing on paper, but to implement it might be a challenge. So we have got the services of people who are going to sit and help us on how to deal with the issue of change management so that we make sure that we do not collapse things. So Chair is something which we have looked at. So it's got those steps. But again, now labor at NEDLAC, we are done. Once now everything is finished, we're still going to go back to the bargaining chamber when gonna the actual transfers are going to be happening and all that.
Of course, also the one side of the coin is that if the proclamation from the president transfer the function, then you'll expect that the people that are in that particular area will go with the function. And of course, they are not forced. But if they don't go, then the challenge is that they may find themselves without work to do. If your job has been at the port of entry to inspect, and that inspectorate is transferred to a particular other entity, then for you to do the work that you know best is to go with that particular work that has been transferred. That's why I'm saying is, at the end of the day, the proclamation may be different and in all sorts of things that can happen. And it depends on the cabinet and the president, how they're going to do that proclamation. But we are actually framing this particular entity the way it is. Like as we have said, is that these two documents has been sent to the DG in Treasury. Then can we await for their response? What is there that they are saying on this particular document? Thank you very much. Then can we pass then to the next document? The next document is the one that is done by our legal office as well as state law and home affairs. If they can take us through this particular document. I don't know who is going to champion it, but you can. You did have lunch, I think.
Yeah.
You should be able to lead. Thank you. Yeah, the one with the black and red text. Come again? You have updated it?
No, we've updated
it. Okay, so then...
Chair, yeah. What I saw is that we made copies of the updated version to take out the red and all that. So the update was distributed to members just before the meeting started.
But there are material changes.
No. There's only one thing. It's a small thing, a comma here or something. It's no
changes.
But it's not material, Chair. It's not material. There's a
difference.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I just want to begin, honourable members, to indicate that as per the direction of the committee, the previous meeting that we had, Ourselves and the law advisor from Parliament, as well as the state law advisors, had a meeting on the 27th of September. Following that, there were also further engagement, obviously via emails, etc., to get the documents finalized, which we've now done, which is the draft that, the committee members are sitting with now. So allow me just to, and obviously what we have in this document is following the deliberations that took place and comments that were made by members, etc., and we've taken that on board, and we have then proceeded to effect certain amendments, or indicate where we suggest amendments be effected in terms of the current bill before us. So the first one that we're looking at, without further ado, Chairperson, is if we look at the preamble in line 4 of the bill, what we're indicating there is that the words that facilitates secure travel and legitimate trade, to delete that from the text. So other words, what it will do now, it will read, recognizing further that there's a need for integrated and coordinated border management in accordance with the Constitution, international and domestic law, in order to, and then the other things follow. My procedure? Okay, thanks. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks, Chair. With regard to the other amendments that we then affected was, if you look at the definition section, there was discussion about the definition of airspace, where it currently means the Border Management Authority established, means the air borders being the outer limits. What we've done there is we've amended that definition to read, means the area enclosed by the outer limit of the internationally recognized airspace of the Republic. Then if we look at the definition of border management itself, there was a suggestion by Justice of Arakok to say take out the word South African National, which we've done now. It just refers now to the Defence Force. And you'll see later on that we've brought in a definition, or we've amended the definition of Defence Force as well. If you look at the definition of border protection function, we're just saying that we must delete the words of the Republic of South Africa. So it would read then that border protection functions means the functions performed exclusively by the Defence Force in terms of Section 200 sub 2 of the Constitution. The next one that we looked at, Honourable Chairperson and members, is the definition of Defence Force. That is on page 5 of the bill itself. What we're just basically aligning it to what's indicated is the meaning ascribed to it in Section 1 of the Defence Act. So we're just aligning the definitions there with what's contained in that specific Act of Parliament. Then if we go to the application of the Act, one of the discussions we had there was regard to subclause 3. And what we're suggesting in terms of subclause 3 is to paragraph A specifically, is to add the words including those performed in respect of the airspace of the Republic. I see there's something in respect of. Sorry, I just picked that up. Respect of the airspace of the Republic, and then you include the words and then we further saying, further to the current paragraph B will be deleted, and the current paragraph C will then become the new paragraph B. And remains the same, postal services. So the only thing that we're doing is deleting paragraph B because it's already captured. What we're stating in paragraph B is basically already captured in paragraph A. So it's tautology. Then if we look at chapter 2, the heading to chapter 2 of the bill, Honourable Chair, we're just including the words establishment of to make clear what we're doing in this specific chapter before the words Border Management Authority. And then if we turn to clause 9 is the next one, which deals with the removal of the commissioner from office. What we basically indicated there based on the discussions that took place is that we are deleting subsection or subclause 1. So the clause dealing with the commissioner must not be suspended or removed from office except in accordance with the provisions of subsection 2, 3, 4 and 5. We are deleting that from the text. So your sub 2 will become 1 now, and we'll say, so this provision will start with, subject to the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, the president may, etc., etc., and we add. And then obviously there will be renumbering that takes place. One, three will become two, four will become three, etc. We'll renumber that. And then in respect of clause three, which is now the new clause two, we are including the following words at the end of that specific sub-clause. I don't know if the members with me. So the current three, which will become the new sub two, will read, it starts with the president may suspend the commissioner. So we're including the words there afterwards referred to in subsection one, not subsection two, it's a consequential amendment, comma, and then it deals with the investigation. Remember we said that there must be a period attached to this. Which investigation must be instituted and finalized within 60 days of the suspension or as soon as reasonably possible thereafter. We then turn to clause 14, Chair, which deals with your commissioned officers. And in terms of clause 14, we're indicating that we must insert a new sub-clause 5, which would read as follows, that the minister may, in respect of officers, confer a commission in terms of subsection 1 or cancel a commission in terms of subsection 4 only after consultation with the commissioner. So in respect of these, there must be consultation with the commissioner. I recall that the committee had expressed their concerns in respect of subsection 4 only. The issue when we went through this document, subsection 1 also deals with, you have to deal with subsection 1 as well, hence this new inclusion of a subsection 5, which will then cater for both of them. If we look at clause 15, what we've basically done there is just to indicate that clause 15.1 is basically inserted, there's an officer must perform, what we're saying, ensure compliance with and enforce the provisions of the Act. We've deleted that to make clear what the intention is, to say that an officer must perform his or her border law enforcement functions in terms of the Act. So what the Act allows them, that is what they need to do. If we go to clause 17 of the Bill, Chair, which deals with the limitation of rights of officers, the whole clause, based on discussions that we had in the committee, has basically been recrafted in the manner that we've indicated there. There's no longer a sub-clause 1 and 2. You only have clause 17 now, which indicates that subject to the Constitution, the rights of officers may, from time to time, and to the extent necessary for purposes of border law enforcement and the safety of such officers, be subjected to, we're looking at A, searches and inspections, B, security clearances, which are already two, that is there. It's in the bill currently as we speak. And we've added C, screening of communications between officers and any other person within or outside of the authority. And D, shared accommodation or privation in accordance with the exigencies of training and operations related to border law enforcement functions. What we've done here is we've also looked at the SANDF legislation when we looked at this. So there is precedence for this, and this is why we're indicating that. And one of the instances that we looked at here and it was explained is if somebody needs to undergo training, say for, and we need to go to say for instance, the Kruger National Park or something on the borderline area, etc. That's where your paragraph D, all this comes in. Says you can't, so we must be able to say that I'm going to be in a tent maybe for a week or two, we're going to undergo this training, etc. But it is for the border law enforcement functions that we need to perform.
Chair, may I just raise something while we're on that point, sir, and come back to it?
We'll come back.
All
right. Let me just complete.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Then if you look at Chapter 6, what we've indicated following the discussion we had, we're just amending the heading there to indicate that we're talking about powers of entry, search, seizure, arrest, and detention, to align it with what we are doing in the specific. And this is the one where members will recall that your clause 18 and 19, we've collapsed that in one, and that's the next one that we're going to deal with, just to have one clause 18. Which would deal with all these issues then. And this is something that Justice also raised, obviously, where they said that if you look at this specific, the referencing is wrong, let's just draw the lines and make sure that we're speaking of the same thing, which we've now done. We've aligned all the issues. So basically it says powers of entry, search, seizure, arrest, and detention. So your clause 18, which is now the next one, your clause 18 has now been drafted to indicate the following. An officer may, with or without a warrant, and then we include A to F. Then your subsection 2 that you have there is where we're saying an officer may, without a warrant, exercise any power in terms of subsection 1. So now we're making clear where this specific official may exercise a power in terms of subsection 1 without a warrant. And then we say a person who is competent to do so consents to that entry, search, inspection, or seizure, or B, the officer on reasonable grounds believes that 1, a warrant will be issued if applied for, and 2, the delay in obtaining the warrant is likely to defeat the object of such warrant, which is your normal processes in terms of your Criminal Procedure Act. If you're applying for a warrant to a magistrate, etc., that's what you have to meet. Chair, what we've not done in this document is now, obviously they will now follow consequential amendments with regard to the numbering, but just for the committee members, we're keeping the numbers, like clause 25 will now actually become clause 24, but we're keeping the clause 25 in this document, just to make clear that so when I refer to something, you're clear as to where we are. But obviously because 18 and 19 has now been clubbed together, 20 will become 19, etc. Thanks, Chair. So if we can move to clause, the next amendment they have is on clause 25, Chair, which deals with an interministerial consultative committee. The only thing that we've done there, Chair, is to arrange subclause 3B, which deals with all the cabinet members, just in alphabetical order, in order with drafting style and format. So hence you'll see economic development, environmental affairs, finance, health, because that's drafting style, and we just have to have them in alphabetical order. So that... The minister is here. Yeah. The minister, paragraph A, yeah. So the minister, obviously, is the Minister of Home Affairs as defined in the Act. It's already covered in paragraph H. Then the next one we're looking at is clause 26, which deals with your border technical committee. And the question that arose there is to why are we saying other organs of state? And we just basically what we're saying, we're deleting the words others and we're replacing it with relevant, the relevant organs of state. So it would read, the border technical committee consists of the commissioner and the heads of the relevant organs of state, or the duly delegated representatives. Chair, if we the next thing we looked at is clause 31 of the bill, which deals with your designation, determination, appointment, etc. And what we've indicated there was Justice also raised certain issues with how you can't the designation, determination, appointment, prescription, withdrawal, cancellation. They say you can't cancel a port of entry, etc. You can't withdraw a port of entry. So we just tidied that up. So we talked about ports, points, or places of entry or exit with the approval of the minister. That's the new heading that we have. And then we deal within the body of the text. We then basically indicate that notwithstanding any other legislation, the power to designate, determine, appoint, or prescribe any port, point, or place of entry or exit for, and then in two areas, the movement of goods and the movements of persons, in and out of them may only be made with the approval of the minister. Then in sub 2, we're talking about the withdrawal or cancellation of that designation. So it's not all in the same line. So we just made sure that we split the two so that it makes sense what we're trying. So any withdrawal or cancellation of the designation, determinate, appointment, or prescription referred to in subsection 1 at any port, point, place of entry, exit, etc., is done with the approval of the minister. And then basically, sub 3 that we have there is basically the subsection 2 that we have currently. It just says the minister must, prior to the approval in terms of subsection 1 or 2, publish a notice in the Gazette for public comments for a period of not less than 30 days, which is already there. We're just moving it down to sub clause 3 now. Chair, the next one that we have is turning to clause 36, which is just one thing I'm looking at. Clause 36, which deals with your regulations. I just think there's this thing there. Why wasn't it? Clause 36. Sorry, it is 36, which is actually offences and penalties. What we're suggesting is that we insert in clause 36.1d powers in an alphabetical, we alphabetize apparently the duties, the functions, the powers, and as follows: to resist, hinder, or obstruct an official in the performance of his or her, and we say duties, functions, or powers, so DFP. Basically, we're just changing the wording around to make sure that it follows us. So we're not talking just about functions or duties. Right. If we look at clause 36.5c, we're basically indicating there that after the words imprisonment, we should include the words or add the words as prescribed in terms of section 37.4. Remember, this is where the clarity was sought with regard to the, if you look at 37.4, is the issue about the degrees of misconduct of officers in breach of the disciplinary code. So the people, but what disciplinary code is this? So we just want to make it sure that the cross-referencing is clear that we're talking about the disciplinary code referred to in section 37.4. Chair, that's what we have.
I think you are done. Is TSD having anything to say? No, we have just released the police, I think. I think we are safe without him. So thank you very much for the time that you have spent with us, and I think we appreciate that. And it's really selflessness and high commitment to service to our people.
It's just a minor thing that I think we just picked up now as the presentation was made on item number 9. We said we're inserting establishment. Actually, we're inserting the words border management. It's just something that will just correct it.
On 9.
Yeah.
You said you insert what?
We said we insert establishment, but actually the words that we're inserting is border management. I think the underlining should be
under,
yeah, because the word establishment of is already there, so it's establishment of authority, but we are saying it should be establishment of border management in full.
So you said all of it.
No. What we need to underline is the words border management
only.
Before you used to read establishment of authority, and now it would read establishment of border management authority.
So, establishment of state as is.
Yeah. I think
now we replace
yeah.
authority with border management
yeah,
authority.
But it's also,
or are we just inserting border management
yeah.
in the space?
Yeah, the heading of clause 4 says establishment of authority.
So between off and authority, we are inserting border management,
yes.
And
but
that is what it should be underlined.
And it's not in the heading of chapter 2, we'll just correct it.
Do you agree? Okay. That means you had a naughty ball pen here that underlined the wrong part of the heading. No, thank you for being vigilant. Honorable members, I think we have had the team that we requested us to assist us with the cleaning of. And now I'll just simply take ourselves to page 1. Honorable members, is there anything that we having a problem with on page 1? Of this very same document, where they've started, the preamble definitions. Are we happy with the cleaning that has been done there? We go to page 2. must raise a hand if there is anything that you think needs further discussion, because they have been actually cleaning on our behalf in relation to some of the comments that were given by Justice, which we claim that Justice should have done us a favor way, and then they actually waited when the bill now has been in Parliament and actually took us back, you know, even with textual amendments. Gumed, on page 2?
On page 2, shouldn't we just write South African National Defence Force in full to be in line, or does Defence Force suffice?
Just respond to that specific one. What informed us to cut South African?
Chair, what we've done here is we're aligning the definition of defence force as it is captured in the Defence Force Act. So that's how it appears in the Act. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is to make sure that this legislation is aligned with the other legislation that's already in place.
Okay. I think that is very clear.
Chair,
yes.
Just a process question. Are you just going to deal with only these items? I mean, there are some one or two other issues that I would like to raise on that I've picked up, but I don't know whether there's going to be another opportunity. On the same thing, but not necessarily
document.
In the document.
It's not in this document.
Not in this one.
No, when we're finished with this one, then we're going to have another engagement.
All right.
Okay, then the page 3.
Chief. Sorry to take you back. I just want to remind you that on clause 6 on page 2, we must just remember we'll include that word of.
Yeah,
in respect
that word
there.
Of. I think we've already done that.
Okay.
Yes, we were alive. We were alive, Chief. On page 3, page 3, clause 14. Page 3, clause 14. That's sub 5, under 13. So there is the thing so-called after consultation with the commissioner. And there is an element of actually forcing the minister and the commissioner to work together. To work together. Because you can't allow a confrontation on this security agency. Then the question now is after consultation with the commissioner the best as compared to in consultation with the commissioner? That's what I just wanted to raise on that specific one. And then the second one on the very same page 3, of course, is that on 17 at the bottom, under 15, number C, item C, screening of communications, you almost talk about bugging. And then is there anything that informs this? Not going to have a backlash, because of course is that it can be done by the Border Management Authority. I don't know, but I'm just raising this, that if we're having a Border Management Authority that is actually spying on its own officials, what does that mean? How that can stand the test? I think those are the two things that I'm just raising. And Dr. you also want some clarity on those issues.
Yeah, well, thank you, Colin Chair. Yeah, screening, if it is done legally, because you've got to go to the judge, to a judge, and do that screening. Because now, a lot of money passes through ports of entry.
Yeah.
Sometimes it may be necessary to screen communication. Thank you.
Okay. The lawyers will tell us.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, with regard to the first one on clause 14, the after consultation with, the difference between after consultation and in consultation with, if you have in consultation with, it means that the commissioner and the minister, they have to agree.
Yes.
So if they at loggerheads and they don't agree, you sit with a stalemate. You've got a problem. What we're trying to do, and this is how we understood the committee as well, is if you say after consultation, is to force that there must be consultation between the two. But ultimately, somebody needs to take a decision at the end of the day. The ideal situation, obviously, is if both the minister and the commission, they agree to this. But if there is ultimately that they can't do it, then somebody needs to take a decision in this regard, and the ultimate decision will then lie with the minister.
Okay.
Chair, as far as the screening issue is concerned, remember, if we look at paragraph or clause 17, how it starts out, it says subject to the Constitution. So all legislation that we have, any screening that should be done, must be subject to the Constitution. And in the Constitution, there's also your constitutionally mandated pieces of legislation, your Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, PAIA, etc. And you have to comply with all those pieces of legislation. And if you're found wanting, obviously you're going to have problems. So that's why we're qualifying it with regard to saying, subject to the Constitution, these rights may be limited. And also bearing in mind the environment that we work in, the kind of officials and people that are going to be working in the border law enforcement area, and the kind of duties that are going to be performed, you'll have to do certain screening, etc., to make sure that corruption and all those things are dealt with sufficiently. Chair.
All right. Yes.
Yeah, just on the same point, I'm satisfied with the explanation, but then D is what, I mean, is that relevant then if it's subject to the Constitution? You don't have shared accommodation issues. Does that make sense?
I've become an honorary lawyer, Chair.
Just explain D.
Sure. No, so the first point to make, Chair, is that this comes from the Defence Act. So it's not something that we are being, you know, created by ourselves. And the reason why we thought it's relevant for this border management legislation is because what the sentence means, it says, so the BMA may be able to limit rights in respect of shared accommodation. So, for example, you can have, so not everyone will, for example, be entitled to single accommodation. And then privation there means basically depriving officers of certain basic rights in relation to the training and the operations that will be conducted. So in the context of the Defence Force, what this means is that when the military is working on the borderline, you know, people live in tents, they sometimes don't even have tents. Basically, there are particular conditions linked to the type of work that they are doing if they go on a two-day mission. So we are saying if the border guard is going to be working in that similar terrain, in a similar environment, we are saying that these types of limitations of rights may become necessary under certain conditions. So that's the kind of motivation, Chair, behind this.
You're happy, Hussein? If you're happy, let's go to page 4. Do we have anything? The 18, I think we dealt with the other day, but if there is any issue we can speak to, is the collapsed 18 and 19 this one.
Can I just ask, what has changed the chair in that first section from 8 to F?
Yeah, I think they can explain. I think it's the heading. I think the first thing, the heading has been amended to remove with warrant and then and inserted. Yeah, and then otherwise, this 18 was not there. It's not there in the current bill. It's a collapsed new provision now of 18 and 19 that is in the bill now. Is this the new 18, I think, if I was made to understand. And you want to help us?
If I may, I think the problem with the comment that Justice made was just that it looks a bit clumsy because we refer, if you look at the clause 19 as it stands now, we refer back to section 18, and we're basically saying that an officer can do all those things in 18. Also without a warrant in certain circumstances. So we just tried to put it as part of section 18 so that we don't make a difference between with a warrant or without a warrant in terms of two different sections anymore. It's just to make the drafting a bit cleaner. So the same, it's actually the same thing, but it's just in one section now instead of in two. But it doesn't change the meaning of what we are saying in section 19, well, in clause 19.
Yeah, but I think the existing bill is E and F, I think, was excluded, if you still remember. E and F was excluded. So now it's included without a warrant. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, yes.
Helped.
We're working as a team.
Yeah.
Yes, it's, if we look at 19, we're excluding E and F, but now it's included with the qualification. If you read the clause as it is, it does say there are certain elements or issues that an officer can do with a warrant, and there are those that he definitely can't do. So it all applies to all the A up to F now, if we look at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we all right? If you're all right, then you go to the next page.
So, Chair, can I just this part then of roadblock or checkpoint, is it in or out? Is it still there, or is it, I'm now confused. Is that part there or not there? Okay, so I have a question on that one. But now it's not in his document, so I'm going to push my luck with it.
It basically, sorry to interrupt, but it's this clause 20 currently that deals with the routine searches and seizures, which
yes.
We still retain, yes.
But then the question, Chair...
The current clause 20.
Yeah.
In the bill. Okay.
Chair, it says an officer may, without a warrant, conduct a roadblock. I mean, is that part really necessary? Do you need a warrant to conduct a roadblock?
I think it's just a provision, an enabling provision, really. But the actual conducting the roadblock, I think, as you have said, it is we have got other provisions that talk to collaboration and working together and all sorts of things. Probably then... I don't think we just expect that just a few couple of guards will just wake up and just block the entrance to the port of entry, saying that they are searching things. Yes.
Better check.
Leave it to the legal.
Yeah. If your mic, I don't know. Yeah, there's a roadblock that will be done.
Yeah.
As an example, by the SAP as well with the approval. You do need a warrant, basically. Because there are certain things that you may seize, do whatever. But if you read it halfway, as Honourable Member was saying, did, you won't get the proper meaning of what it means. Because this is within the border law enforcement area. So it's not at a place where you would need the approval of the SAPS or the involvement of the SAPS. So it's within the area where the BMA has got exclusive jurisdiction.
Yeah.
It's fine. That is which is Chairperson, 10 kilometers from the border. So it means that even here in Cape Town you can enforce it.
Well, that's why I was raising the fact that you can't stop the border officers from doing routine checks. You can't stop that. Otherwise, then it's a farce, actually. But then the one thing again that you understand is that they're not just going to wake up and just simply close the road within the border management area and just close it. There must be some reasonable reasons why on that day then they intended to do that. And it should have gone through the correct command structure. And that's why I'm saying it's an enabling provision, actually. But the manner in which the people that will be doing that are trained, they're not going to do like me, who just wake up and say, I want to catch sausages.
Indeed, Chair, yes. you're correct, and we also need to it's with the written approval of the commissioner at the end. You also need to, so obviously the commissioner will also be aware of this. It's not just somebody waking up, even your officers, they say, I want to have a roadblock today. No, there is certain processes and procedures that
All right, and then we go to page 5. But with page 5, from my side, I really have reservations on 20, under clause 25. I really don't think that the agriculture, cooperative, department, economic development, health, and transport, that they really matter much in the border management area. Yes, at certain awkward times, then things that reside in those particular departments may form part of the activities that happens there, but not directly affected on a daily basis. And I would recommend that we relook at that and those, but I'm sure I'm repeating myself for the 15th time on this specific one, is that one of the things that actually motivates me to continue to say this is because the Interministerial Committee should not be a big organization. You need the one that can meet and resolve the matters that affect the border, because this is a security structure, and then decisions may need to come as fast as it's possible at certain times. And therefore, to have 12 ministers, almost you have got close to a third of the cabinet. You see. So also the other thing is that those that don't form part of the Interministerial Committee then will be accommodated under C, that they can or D, whatever we provide, that they can be invited as and when they've got a matter to come and assist the Interministerial Committee, rather than just keeping them there when on a daily basis many days there's nothing that affects them. And I think I've tried to make a little bit of noise. Elroy, and then you also continue.
Chair, I've consulted here with the DG, so I haven't consulted with their side. So let me. Yeah, so I think, Chair, I think in general we will try and reduce them. So I think that's the most important comment. But the second comment I want to make, Chair, is maybe just to highlight three or four departments and to explain, or ministries, and explain why it's important. So the first one, for example, is agriculture, forestries, and fisheries. Now, Chairperson and members, we will recall that phytosanitary inspections, checking the movement of endangered species in and out of the country, that is absolutely critical for that ministry and that policy department to be there. It's an important part of border management. So that one, we maybe want to try and repeat a bit of an argument. Then another one that maybe falls in a similar category is number 5, environmental affairs. They have a responsibility for dealing with, amongst others, endangered species, things like wildlife poaching, and in fact, as of sitting here right now, they already are busy with a pilot project at OR Tambo, where they've got their officials physically working there, checking movements of environmental assets moving in and out of our country. So there may be a reason to keep them. Yeah. The next one is health. Health, again, there's a function called port health, where we have health officials checking, dealing with public health issues, like the example DJ Pleny gave around Ebola. So for us, that is also a very important function. In fact, when the BMA comes into force, before travelers actually come to immigration counter, the first line they must pass is actually public health. The people should be standing there. If somebody is coming coughing and collapsing, they're not even going to take that person to the immigration counter. They're going to try and make an assessment there and then. So that may be another motivation, Chair. The last one that I just maybe want to explain is transport. Right now, we have Transport being responsible for a couple of entities that have a very strong role in the border environment. The one example is exactly that, Chair, CBRTA, the Cross Border Road Transport Agency, buses, taxis, and so on. There are also one or two other entities that Transport is responsible. So at least those, Chair, we would say if we can maybe reconsider those. I'm not commenting on the others. Thanks, Chair.
Agree with you to say maybe COGTA we can look at it to reduce. I think maybe economic if DTI is there as trade and industry, maybe we can look at that. Even tourism will be more giving us issues than anything else, but they've got nothing to do with the border. So I think I'll be helping enough with the agriculture, defense, environment, finance, health, police, state security, trade and industry and transport at least, and then we can still look at it further.
Okay, at the end of the day, I'm not going to be able to tell you which ones you must remove and which ones you must. I'm just expressing a view, but it is based on the principle that let's keep this committee small. And then if it is impossible to keep it small, then we must expect the challenges that will flow from that. But then also, we say, see any other cabinet member designated by the president, it is fine. And then I think we must provide for another D, where we say, no, this particular IMC has got a right to invite any other minister at any other time, or invite any other person. Say it that way, that they may feel that is important on their particular day of a meeting or whatever, with the matters in front of them. That's what I would I'll propose, so that we empower that committee to be able to get people in there. We agreed. You'll just simply work on this, and then whatever you come out with the list, it is your baby. You are technocrats. So can we go to the next page? Figland, you have got nothing on the last page. Thank you very much. Then can we say that now they can start effecting these into our amendments to the bill? They can start working on the bill amendment. Now, if we agree on that one, honorable members, then there is that other document that I was referring to. It is mainly that many of the things are administrative. If we can try and have the document in front of us, then we can fly through it. The first issue that was raised there. Come again?
Which one?
The one that I requested the department to talk to certain issues. Yeah. The first one is the issue that this particular authority is gonna be in charge of the whole country, all ports of entry in the whole country, and it is expected that there will always be legal implications, administrative, as well as the operations themselves outside their offices. And then I thought that there is a need for a deputy commissioner, if not two. Splitting them to operations and the other one to corporate, whatever. And then subject them to the same appointment procedures of the commission to actually provide clarity when the commissioner is not available, and then so that there is no confusion who will act as well. But to have people that are professionally qualified for the two different areas, and then to make sure that the thing runs, whether the commissioner is there or not there. I think that is just a proposal that was on one. Then the second one that we are having there was just merely to say, if the commissioner is appointed by the president, then why should we collapse that to the acting commissioner? If the commissioner is incapable of doing the work, why should the acting commissioner be appointed by the minister? What has changed? And then why can't we say that that acting commissioner should be appointed on either on the recommendation of the minister? Because the same status of the commissioner, that acting commissioner will assume those powers as well. And again, is that an acting commissioner may act for almost 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, given the experiences that we are having currently with a lot of acting. I think that is what it is on number two. I'm not sure whether we should actually just pass on that particular page. What are your views? Not necessarily to agree today, but just the views.
Yeah,
if it makes sense or doesn't make sense, and then we'll have another day where we are going to fight on this thing.
Yeah, that's the process question I got, because there are, I mean, I recall this, that you raised a number of issues, and this is the response, but equally so, we also have issues that we want to raise, and the question is, when is that going to come? So I wonder whether we should not maybe do both at the same time rather than dealing with this one only now. Some of them relate to what we're going to ask. So, I mean, how far you want to take this discussion?
No, it's just that at the moment I'm just raising this so that the members understand what was behind this, and then that's what I'm saying is we've got that first page, and then I think the rest of the other things are administrative. We'll expect that when we subject these documents to our legal office, then they can deal with them. Because they are administrative and technical. But that, at least the ones that are just raised now here, is the one that the ones that are actually substantial. Because I don't want to go right through up to the end of the document and then we come and start again. Because we need to quickly get those two issues that we're talking about. Or just raise the issues that we wanted to raise. In relation to this as well, you can express a view on this and then raise those two issues.
Chair, let me just question. I'll ask this just for the purpose of the process. Now,
yeah.
I mean, there are a number of issues that's in this document,
yeah,
which relate to the bill itself.
Yes.
Some of which may relate to questions that we might have on the bill.
Yeah.
Some of it might not. Now, I mean, I respect the position you've taken where you said we will have another opportunity for us to be able to deal with other aspects of the bill that we may have queries on, we may not be satisfied that we could raise. Even before that stage, because then if it's at a clause-by-clause stage, then it means we're going to delay the process and send it back.
Okay.
So I would much rather we deal with it before we get to the clause-by-clause. So the question I'm asking is that, is there going to be yet another opportunity for us to deal with that? If that's the case, then I'm just happy to accept this document as is, and then because there will be an opportunity for us to engage further on other aspects of the bill. That's I just need to understand that process, so we don't get to a point where you then say, "No, sorry, your time is past. We're now not dealing with that." Because I know you have a tendency of doing that.
it is not going to happen that way. It's just if it will mean that we meet on Sunday. Among ourselves being 11 members, if ever, then we have a full complement. We'll do so. We'll do so. I know, it's fine. Hussein goes on to church on Friday. It's not a problem. Sunday does. So what I'm saying is that, have you read the document? Because, of course, I think it was made available yesterday. Have you gone through it? And then does the things that are in make sense? Because what one wants to say as well is that those things that we are not having squabbles about, then the drafting team should start looking at them. And then those things that we have got some squabbles about them, then we can have another day as well, like as you say, of said. Then we actually speak to them. But some of the things you'll realize that even the department have said they don't have problems with it, and then it can be considered and blah, 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 because there are no real material challenges with them. They actually seek to improve the bill and actually the administration of the bill. You see, these issues of having a very big paragraph talking about the extension of the term of the commissioner, including 60 years, 65 years, 2 years, as and when somebody is happy, to try and clean those particular matters.
Yes. May I just make this one request, and that is, I'm not sure that we're going to have the opportunity to be able to go through each one of these questions that you posed in the responses and try to understand it in the detail in which we'd like to. And so may I ask that when we do have the opportunity, possibly at the next sitting, that we maybe collapse your queries with any other queries that any one of us might have around the bill, and then we can deal with all of them on one go.
Okay.
Or else this is probably going to take at least another 3, 4, 5 hours if you really want us to go through them.
You see, Sam, but the most important thing I think that is here, that may need an extensive provisions is if we agree on the deputy commissioners, because then you'll need a very considered paragraph. Does it make sense that you should provide for that, for the smooth running of the entity? Because if you don't have the inspector general, then it's just simply you have got nobody. But then also, like as I was saying, is that you can expect that with this border management authority, there will be people that will take it to court and all that because they are aggrieved by that and that. Then administrative issues, you know, it's people being spied on and then taking the authority, the officials to court and whatever. Then to have to provide somebody that is properly qualified in that area to be a deputy for that particular section. Then you've got these that looks like the armed guards, security guards, and you know, have somebody that's heading that particular section as a deputy commissioner that is properly and appropriately qualified and trained to do that. And then if we agree on that particular principle that we need to provide that, they would have to start thinking about a very extensive provision that must be included. And then the other ones, I think it is, it's just a deletion and then change or that and then here and there. And then if we agree on them. And then, of course, is that we will have to provide an opportunity where we come and really clear our differences on the beam. Tate Gumer, what are you saying?
No, in fact, quite personally, I'm in favor of having a deputy. I think it's only fair to give the opposition parties enough time to consider what
yes.
in here. But they've got to know that perhaps we think we are thinking of a deputy commissioner because of experiences where there is no deputy commissioner. And if not a deputy commissioner, then perhaps they make proposals. Well, how does the institution function without a leader? Because remember, this thing is a quasi-military thing, and then hierarchy matters in matters of the army or police, and you can't just be led by somebody who is not having the same rank. So perhaps if you look at all those things at the same time, just do consider those things, and then perhaps those are the things that make me say it's better to have a deputy. But I think I trust you that you are going to be in a position to give very positive input to make us move forward when we meet. Thank you.
Yeah, on the 18th, I think we'll still have some sort of an engagement. And then we can really provide adequate time on that one as well. But like as I'm saying, is that if there is a view that says we are supportive or it makes sense, then it will assist the drafting to start looking at that particular paragraph. And we can come and throw it away if you come having changed your mind. And then, but there must be something that says they can assist us to have that draft and then to be made. And then on the 18th, I think we are still going to have an engagement, although it was meant for clause by clause, but I think we can push that date of clause by clause a little bit further down.
Mm-hmm.
Ra.
Yeah.
Chair, may I just say that and to explain it like this, there are some things in this document we can easily agree to. There are other things that we might not, that would require a little bit more in-depth discussion. Let's take the principle of the oversight mechanisms in the bill, for example. That's going to require some debate and
yes.
discussion among some sides. So, which is why I'm suggesting that I don't think we're going to be able to deal with it now. Although I don't think we're entirely opposed to that.
You're getting lost from me. I'm talking about the first page that talks about it.
Yeah, but I worry that when you start with the first page, you're going to go to the second.
No, we are not going there. We are not going there.
No, I know you too well.
We have agreed with you that we are taking this now to another day.
Sure.
But now I'm saying is look at number one, and then and possibly number two. That would need extensive drafting. Only if we are of one mind that there is a necessity for this, and then we stop there. Then you raise that point. We go home now with our homework. Then you raise those things that you wanted to raise, so that ourselves as well, we go and try and process them before the 18th, and then we will be too close to closure of this meeting. And the document.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I know that the DA is very good in submitting the written
paper.
Submission. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think we should worry about that. Perhaps you can give them a deadline to make submissions for consideration. And then when we deal with the clause by clause, then those submissions would already have been either included or perhaps flagged.
In relation to this document?
Because that document, if let us say we accept the whole of this document,
yeah.
it is going to be part of the law.
Yeah.
And what I am saying is that perhaps
the law,
let us say we talk about Clause 7, for instance. We say there are these, that we write the clause number 7, and then we say, but there are these views. One,
okay.
There should be a deputy commissioner. Two, there should not be a deputy commissioner. Then proceed to three,
okay.
and so forth. So that it makes it easier for us all.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Does
that make sense, you're saying that you can look at this bill and all the documents that are in front of us and make comments, and then when do you think we can when is the 18th? Next week, Tuesday. I think they'll be ready on Tuesday. They'll be ready on Tuesday, exactly.
Yeah, it must come from today, 14 days, Chair.
From 14
today,
days.
14 days.
Okay, assist us, Hussein.
Yeah,
I think
if we can meet, when we meet on the 18th. If we can meet on the 18th, and I think we might be in a position to be able to put some proposals on, our proposals on the bill. Because then that will give at least the department the opportunity to be able to, if we decide to accept some of those proposals, to make those changes and come back with an amended version.
Okay. Okay. I don't have squabbles. I don't have problems about that. And then we'll see when we meet next week on Tuesday. And then I think on that score we must thank the department for having done the dirty work. And also, of course, we will just simply pursue and that we get some sort of response from Treasury. But if we don't get any response from Treasury, then I think it will take our responsibilities. And we acknowledge that the documentation has been forwarded to the DG in Treasury, and then we really expect a response and some sort of performance from their side so that we are able to move forward. And then we have of course agreed that this must start to be factored in the amendment, the one that has been done by the department, the state law advisors, to just start cleaning that. And then this specific one, I don't think it will be a danger if we start crafting something that provides for the deputy commissioner on a separate page, so that if we come and agree, then we don't need to take long to get that. And then if we don't agree, then we just simply throw the page away. And then I think, because it looks like all of us, of course, would like that this entity to function properly, and then that can only improve the functioning of it. And yeah, well, thanks. Of course, is that Mr. Thomas Sekers just squeezed in. You are welcome. And then, this takes us to the end of this meeting, and then we should be meet next week on Tuesday. Thank you very much. Just before that, I think the DG wanted to say something. I've covered you.
You covered me on this thing of that treasure, but I'm sure the colleagues who are here from National Treasury
will
pass that message.
The message
that they must respond by the next week, Tuesday.
No, not Tuesday. Tuesday is too far. Tuesday is too far. We need to arrive on Tuesday having a position. And then I think is that they need to respond either to yourself, because the letter is from yourself. And then I'm sure they have been processing the matter since they received it. And probably tomorrow and by Friday, or the latest on Monday, then they should have actually communicated to you, and then we can be informed, so that when we come on Tuesday, then we don't really get surprises in the meeting. We need to avoid surprises in the meeting, and to avoid that is to actually get certain documentation in time. It's unfortunate that I can't say so to say that the written submission must come on Saturday evening. But of course, is that it's a responsible man and then very trustworthy. He won't surprise us on Tuesday. No, thank you very much, Honorable Members and all the guests. The meeting is adjourned.
Alright,